Welcome, everybody, to the inaugural SB Nation Houston podcast. This is exciting. I'm Brian McDonald. I cover the Rockets for SB Nation Houston. And with me, I've got Dylan Gwynn, the mighty Gwynn of Sports Talk 790. How are you doing, sir?
Very well. Thanks for having me aboard.
Of course. There's no other person I want to have here for the first one. Let's start with football. The lockout, as we record this on Thursday, looks like it's about to end soon.
Yes.
Maybe this weekend, maybe Monday. Hopefully tomorrow, but we don't know. Now, going Texans angle, they've got a new defensive coordinator, mm-hmm. new defensive scheme, three new rookies that they're going to be counting on with Watt and Reed and their cornerback, whose name is
Brandon Jennings.
Right, exactly. What can you realistically expect from this defense next year? They didn't have OTAs. You didn't have mini camps. You got some rookies. Obviously, the secondary is inexperienced. What do you think you can realistically expect from the defense next season?
I think you can expect a significant improvement just off of what you have right now with Wade Phillips. And yes, the lockout is a factor, but it was a factor for everybody. Nobody's gotten, you know, that kind of time with their team. Now, the Texans are in a unique position because they're changing coaches, they're changing schemes, stuff like that. I get that. But I expect them to be significantly better just with the rookies they've added and the coaches that they've added onto the staff. I would expect them to be an improved defense. Now, the $1 million question, what happens if they land a major free agent?
Nnamdi Asamoah,
we're all talking about and hoping for. If they land somebody like him while they're adding these nice young rookies and getting new coaches in and stuff like that, then all of a sudden this goes from being potentially a somewhat below average defense,
right,
which is a big improvement from what it
right.
was
what, 31st
year.
Last year?
Yeah, I mean, when I say below average defense, that's a monster improvement from the historically bad
yes.
secondary that we had on this team last year. So, you know, that would be an improvement. But if they could land an Asamoah, somebody who takes over half the field, all of a sudden this goes from being a somewhat below average defense to potentially even being a good one. In 1 year, they could go from being 31st or 32nd in the league, whatever they were last year,
right.
to potentially being in the upper half.
Okay, well, that's I certainly hope you're right. Now, we mentioned Nnamdi Asamoah, some other secondary guys that are out there. Ike Taylor, the Steelers, Eric Weddle. Now, I mean, Ike Taylor's not a big name, but do you have faith in the Texans, in Bob McNair more specifically, and Rick Smith, that they can go out there and get that big name? And now, in Bob McNair's tenure, now, while he hasn't been shy at signing free agents, Marlon Greenwood, Todd Wade, who certainly did not work out.
Right, right.
But he hasn't gone and got out the free agent. He hasn't gone out and got the Julius Peppers or, you know, insert any name from the past. Do you have faith that they'll go out there and make the commitment to get one of those top-notch free agents?
If you have that faith, I'm not going to say you shouldn't have it, but you have nothing to base it on.
Because, no, I completely
because,
agree.
I mean, there's been nothing, as you said, quite right. There's been nothing in their history to suggest that they've ever done that. Now, in the Amon Green year, that was obviously not money well spent.
Yes.
He did not work out here. However, Amon Green was one of the larger name free agents who was available that year. So they did go out and try to get a big name free agent and actually did get him. Now, it turned out to be a terrible decision.
No, I completely agree. They've taken their swings. Unfortunately,
right.
They've just missed on every one of their swings.
But see, that's why if I'm in the Texans front office right now, I am loading up for Bear to go get Nnamdi Asamoah. And if he's the only thing I get out of this entire free agency period, I still think I win.
That's a win.
Because he's a can't miss.
Right.
You're loading. Yes, you may overspend egregiously and all this other kind of stuff. It's free agency. Everybody overspends,
yeah.
This is a can't miss guy who fills a need on this team that is so incredibly vital right now. The ability to take away a receiver and half the field so you can focus on the pass rush and stuff like that I think is just incredibly important. You mentioned Ike Taylor. I like Ike Taylor, but let's look at his history.
Yeah.
He plays behind the best pass rush in the history of the NFL, one of the best pass rushes in the history of the NFL. Do you think Ike Taylor is going to be as effective as a Houston Texan corner when you've got guys who aren't half as good as James Harrison and Lamar Woodley and Troy Polamalu and people like that?
You're completely right. His play would definitely go down. He's more of definitely a guy that benefits from the coverage that the Blitzburg defense could get. I think he would be an improvement.
Sure.
But yeah, you're right.
But then again, you could say that about anybody, though.
Yeah,
any of these free agents would be an improvement over anybody we currently have.
What do you think of Eric Weddle? If you miss out on Asamoah, what about Eric Weddle as your second option?
I love Eric. Well, see, as my second option.
I mean, he's a safety.
He's a
I know.
Safety, different position. As my second option, I'd actually rather go Jonathan Joseph.
Okay, the Bengals.
Because Jonathan Joseph still allows you to move Glover Quinn to safety,
right,
which addresses the safety position. But speaking about Eric Weddle specifically, though, I love Eric Weddle. I think he's a playmaker, and he's also played for Wade Phillips before.
Yes.
And in defenses that were modeled after Wade Phillips, so he knows the system. He knows his role. He would be able to go out there and help the younger guys, too, who are just learning it, which, you think about it, is a huge benefit when you haven't had an offseason to really work together.
Yeah.
You're having this incredible
coach kind of.
Yeah, you're having this incredibly condensed period of time that you've got to get ready for the season. Having a guy who's been in this system before, who knows it very well, to come in and help the young guys along, I think adds to his value immensely.
No, I completely agree. We're sitting with Dylan Gwynn of Sports Talk 790. Now let's talk about the lockout of a different league.
Yeah.
A lockout that we both agree probably going to be much more damaging, last a whole lot longer. I mean, your basic take overall, I think this could last a while. I mean, how long do you think this will last? The question seems to not be, will we miss games? It seems to be more, how many?
I think we'll be lucky to get 50 games in.
Lucky.
Lucky to.
And that's what they did in 99, so you think it'll be worse than the last lockout?
It has every bit of potential in the world to be worse than it was in 99. And I'll tell you why. A lot of people think this lockout is about teams like Dallas and LA that overspend recklessly and stuff like that. It's really not. This lockout is about the Portland Trail Blazers, and I'll explain why.
Okay.
They were a team that spent wisely last year, put together a good product on the court. They had very good season ticket sales. They had very good local network ratings. They did everything right and didn't make money. What this lockout boils down to is three words: guarantee of profitability. These owners want the same deal, the same shake the NFL guys get. If you go out and draft well in the NFL, and you do well in your local ratings, and you sell out your building, and you put together a team that makes it to the playoffs, brother, you're making money.
Yeah.
You're making
money. No, you're right.
There's no two ways about it. These NBA owners, guys like who run the Portland Trailblazers, now admittedly, Paul Allen is immensely wealthy, but still, he's not alone. These NBA owners who go out there and do everything right don't make money.
No, I think you're right about this. I mean, I think the best way I know to put it is the NFL lockout was about splitting up the revenue that was already there, whereas the NBA lockout is about how do we create revenue.
Exactly. I mean, the NFL was debating who got bigger slices of a pie that was growing. The NBA is determining how they're going to make the pie. They're not making money as an organization right now as a collective entity. So, I mean, it's an entirely different situation. And even the teams that do it right can't win. So if you're going to attract new owners to this league, if you're going to attract new investors, if you will, to put it that way, like you would in a business, you've got to give them a reason to believe that they're going to see a return on their investment at some point in the future. And if you can't promise them that, if you can't show them that, a business model that's going to guarantee they see some return on their investment, people will stop investing and your league will fade.
Now, on the lockout note, there's been some reports, how valid they are, we can debate. But there's been some talks that Kobe might want to go over and play in China during the lockout. He's got a big fan base there.
Yeah.
Deron Williams has come out and said he might play in Turkey. The Rockets' own draft pick, Donatas Montiejunas, is going to go back and play for Italy. Do you think any some of these lesser players, we remember Josh Childress a couple years ago playing overseas, do you think any of the lesser guys, the six men, you know, the guys down the bench, might just stay over there, go over there, like it, and stay if they can get a decent enough contract? How do you think this will affect the overall landscape of the NBA?
I think if they get a decent enough contract, I mean, especially, you know, I don't think a team in Europe is going to be able to pay Kobe Bryant more than what the Lakers are paying him.
Well, I'm certainly not suggesting Kobe. Yeah. Yeah.
But you bring up the point with some of the middle of the road.
Right.
Lesser guys. Absolutely. Because think about it. Who is this? This lockout is really a war on the middle class of the NBA. It's not a war on the big guys like Kobe and LeBron and D-Wade. Those guys make a lot of money, but they also earn a lot of money for the league. It's not a war on the guys who are making veteran minimums. It's not that. It's a war on the Lamar Odoms.
Yeah.
It's a war on the Luol Dangs and all these guys who make somewhere between $9 and $13 million a year. Those, and don't have revenue generating capability like other people do. That's who this is really a war on right now. Those are the guys who are hurting their teams financially. So could a guy like Lamar Odom get a deal in Italy where he's making maybe 15 instead of 13 and he's a big deal in Italy and he's nobody's second fiddle. He's not sixth man of the year over in Italy. He's number one. He's like the big guy. Could you possibly lure away some of those guys during this lockout? Absolutely.
I think that's a good point because, like you said, the Kobe's, the LeBron James, they're still going to get top dollar. Plus, they got all their sponsorships.
Yeah.
The lesser guys are still going to get league minimum no matter what. But those mid-level contracts are the ones that the NBA owners are going after. I think that's a great point. Now, more to a more Rockets perspective, the Rockets have six power forwards. You and I have had many conversations.
Did they lose a few? What?
You're right. That's true. I did leave
forgetting a zero at the end of the six.
I think so. Okay. 60, yeah. Maybe. I don't know. But how do you – now, we talked earlier about the NFL maybe having only a one-week free agency before training camp opens. Daryl Morey, at least in my point, has a bigger vision of this roster than it's currently constructed. There's a wheeling and dealing he would like to do. Now, if he's also putting the same sort of strengths that NFL GMs are put in, 1 week training camps open, how do you think this overall roster will look? How do you think that affects them as far as being able to go out and get what they want for this year or having to settle for building following season?
With a limited free agency timetable. Well, I mean, you got to believe that these GMs are going to be communicating in some way all throughout this lockout process. Yeah. So, I mean, I don't think it's going to be a situation. I don't think there's a rule barring them from talking to each other. I think it's involving the players.
Right, management, two players, yeah.
Yeah, I think managers from respective companies can talk to each other. So I think, you know,
I'm
assuming that's true, but I think there's going to be some kind of communication throughout the entire process right now. As far as Daryl Morey and the Rockets go, and you mentioned the six power forwards. I mean, they need to pull something off to get some young guys in here. And it's specifically at the five spot. You can't have a 6'5" center.
Agreed.
You're never going to win.
Of course, you know, I'm a huge fan of Chuck Hayes.
Yeah, we all are.
I've said before, if you don't like Chuck Hayes, you're not a real American.
Yes, you hate America.
But, yes.
And you want the terrorists to win.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, I got nothing but love for the guy, but the problem is he's vertically challenged.
Yes, I agree.
And you need somebody to
he's
come in.
He's suited
there.
To be a backup.
Exactly right. You need somebody to come in and take that over. I mean, I gotta believe he has trades in the works for that. The question is, and this has always been the question with Daryl Morey, he is the great assembler of assets.
Yes.
We know that. We've all seen him do it over the years with more players than we can possibly name in this session. But what has he ever gotten for them? And that's the issue. Who is he targeting? I mean, that's a question too. Cause I mean, you know, a lot of these power forwards, I mean, Luis Scola is on the wrong side of 30.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's Patrick Patterson was a late lottery pick, you know, a middle of the first round guy, pick number 14. I mean, you put the sum of your parts together. What do you get? Center? Do you get is Samuel Dalembert the best kind of player you can possibly get with that group? Because I don't think you're putting those pieces together and coming away with Andrew Bynum.
No, I mean, he's made well known about efforts to get Chris Bosh. He's made well-known efforts to get Carmelo Anthony, but obviously he's come up short in all those all those attempts. So certainly there are question marks. Can he land the big free agent? And really, I think we agree, until he lands the big free agent, all the other assets are meaningless. Because the NBA, you have to have not just a star, most likely multiple stars to win an NBA title.
I mean, look at the Heat. I mean, the Heat had two bona fide stars. I mean, two of the top three players in the NBA, plus a guy who's really, really good in Chris Bosh, and couldn't get it done.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that if it's one thing that this season proved to us, it's that we're past the point of it taking one or even two stars. Yeah, to get to the playoffs, one star can get you in there, maybe two. But if you're talking about winning championships, winning conference finals, it's going to take more than that.
All right, let's switch sports over a little bit. The Astros, obviously, not a whole lot of great things to talk about. They've been, could you say, a bad team? Is that appropriate?
Fair. Okay. I mean, if you looked up bad in the dictionary, there might be a giant picture of Brad Mills looking at you.
It wouldn't be Carlos Lee? Okay, well, I digress. Now, obviously, the season as far as, I mean, the Astros as far as this season is concerned is over. It's been over for quite a long time.
Sure.
So that you have to start looking to not only 2012, but 2013 and beyond. We talked before about trades and who should be protected, who should not be protected. Your thoughts on who they should look to trade, who they should look to protect, and what you overall you would do if you're Ed Wade.
If I'm Ed Wade right now, I think given the team, and as of the date of this recording, is 28 games under 500.
I believe so, yeah.
You're not looking at a salvageable situation. This is the problem with the Astros right now. All their quality players, and they actually, you know, you wouldn't believe it looking at their record,
yeah.
but they actually do have a few
quality players. Yeah.
Hunter Pence, Michael Bourne, Wandy Rodriguez, Brett Myers, and maybe Jeff Kepinger. These guys are quality players. However, they're not young. So the fundamental problem with the Astros is this. You've got a couple young guys on your team who may one day be good. But the good guys you have on your team right now, by the time this team, you know, really turns the corner, they're going to be past their prime.
Yeah.
So really you're in a situation where you have to start trading guys and really just starting over. I think Hunter Pence gets you the most out of anybody. You've got three teams that are serious playoff contenders, a couple that are World Series contenders that have talked openly about the need for a right-handed hitter, talking about Boston, Philadelphia. The Giants want a repeat. They need offense. God knows that.
Yeah.
Hunter Pence has had a monster year. He's hitting, I still believe, over .320.
Yeah, I don't think he's had a higher batting average since his rookie season.
He's still got another year of arbitration.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's somewhat affordable for one more season, too. You know, I mean, that's a deal that where you could possibly net a top 10 prospect from a very good organization with a good farm system. You know, got that. Wandy Rodriguez is 32 years old. The Yankees have gotten nothing out of AJ Burnett all year, and they
normally a 32-year-old pitcher with multiple years left would be, I think, a turnoff. But I think, and this seems to trump everything else in baseball. Left-handed.
He's
pitcher.
A lefty.
Lefty it's trumps
like,
everything.
It's like being a 7-footer in the NBA.
Yeah.
I mean, it's your calling card. It's your
yes.
get out of jail free card. It's your it's your meal ticket. Wandy's a lefty, and he's pitching extremely well.
Yeah.
So I mean, especially when you factor in cities like New York and places like that, they want to win now. You know,
I think Detroit would be a great fit for him. I mean, you got Verlander. After that, you got young guys like Porcello, Scherzer, but those guys, I mean, their ERA is around 4.30. You get into a short playoff series, you go Verlander, Wandy, I think you're set up pretty nicely.
Oh, sure. No, nobody's going to turn down that one, too. So, I mean, I think there's a lot of options out there. And at this point, some people would argue in holding on to one of these guys so you can remain competitive. But, I mean, look, you've got all five of them now.
Yeah, and you're still going to lose 100 games.
You're still on pace to have the worst team in franchise history. So the idea of holding on to somebody because you might be competitive, it just doesn't really work.
No, I completely agree. Thank you for joining us, sir.
Absolutely, man. Anytime.